yourcallradio.org. What will it take to remove money from politics? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.
That's tomorrow morning's Your Call at 10 o'clock in the...
Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Lauren Meltzer. Our topic this hour is sexual trafficking. Can it be stopped? When you hear about sexual trafficking, you may think of recent news stories about children being forced into prostitution in Thailand and China. However, sexual trafficking of children is a problem right here in the Bay Area. The FBI has identified the Bay Area as one of the 13 hotspots across the country for what is called commercial sexual exploitation of children, or CSEC. Although numbers are hard to confirm, one study estimated that there are at least 3,000 prostituted children in San Francisco alone, and the girls being recruited are between 12 and 14 years old. Why are CSEC crimes on the rise in the Bay Area? What are local law enforcement agencies and nonprofits doing to combat it? And is there anything that can be done to protect and rescue these girls? Joining me to answer these questions and more are guests from across the Bay Area. First, we have Charmaine Bach, Assistant District Attorney for Alameda County. Charmaine created the Human Exploitation and Trafficking Unit, otherwise known as HEAT, the first in its kind in the country, and is currently in charge of a special operations and policy development for the Alameda County's DA's office. In 2010, the California legislature recognized Charmaine as the Woman of the Year for her groundbreaking work to stop human trafficking. Welcome, Charmaine.
Thank you.
We also have Lieutenant Jason Fox, from the San Francisco Police Department's Special Victims Unit. He's the leader of the SFPD SVU, which was created to investigate crimes of abuse committed against the city's most vulnerable, which includes human trafficking. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you.
And last in the studio, we have Adrian Beckman, who's the Deputy Probation Officer for the San Mateo County. And Adrian is co-developing a protocol for working with commercially sexually exploited children for the San Mateo County's juvenile probation. Welcome.
Good evening. Thank you.
And by phone, we have Molly Ring. She is Chief of Programs for SAGE, which stands for Standing Against Global Exploitation, the Standing Against Global Exploitation Project. And SAGE is a nonprofit organization that aims to bring an end to human trafficking and the commercial sexual exploitation of children and adults. And for SAGE, Molly oversees the direct services for victims of human trafficking and violence, and leads outreach, training, and public education efforts for regional and national partners. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you.
So what a ensemble of people we have here. Feel very lucky. And we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So let me start off tonight with Molly. You are with the girls. That's most of the time. Is that correct?
Yes. I oversee the case management services as well as mental health counseling for the girls who have been exploited as well as those who are at high risk of exploitation.
Okay. So who are these children? And I say girls, but are there girls and boys that are victims?
Definitely. There are girls and boys and many transgender youth who are victims of commercial sexual exploitation as well as labor exploitation. So we see a high level of crossover between youth who are not only put out on the street for the purposes of prostitution, but also youth who are forced to sell drugs for that same pimp. So just to be clear that, you know, we do also see the forced labor here as well. The youth predominantly, I mean, I think one of the main trends we see is early childhood sexual abuse. So many of these youth were abused prior to being abused in the commercial sex industry. The majority of them have interfaced either with the juvenile justice system or the foster care system as well. And so these youth are not, invisible in the sense that they're not absent from existing child welfare systems. They're actually very much present within them, and it really just takes having the right protocols to identify them in order to get them into intervention services like those that we provide at SAGE.
And are they of all, I mean, tell me more about the demographics of these kids. Are they all races? Are they, what about in terms of their economic, where they come from? Economically, you mentioned a lot about foster children, but are there children that aren't in that system?
Sure, there are. I'd say, you know, upwards of 90% are in the foster care system or the juvenile justice system, but there are that 10% who might come from a suburban family who may be neglectful, or, you know, they may be someone who just was on the internet and someone reached out to them, and, you know, based on, you know, a whole range of reasons, maybe the excitement, the way, what media, the messages that media has told them about the sex industry and how glamorous it is. You know, there are many youth who are recruited who don't necessarily fit that demographic, but the majority do, and the majority are coming from low-income backgrounds. They are coming from homes where there is not the support of a parent or guardian. They are coming, you know, we don't see as much drug and alcohol dependency early on, but that is something that develops over time. It's a tactic that pimps and traffickers use to really coerce and manipulate the youth, get them addicted to substances and become more vulnerable to them. And as well as, and we see many kids who are runaways, kids who are throwaways. They're kids who have just become homeless on the streets of San Francisco or have come to San Francisco because they know that it's maybe, they think that it's maybe easier to be homeless here. So we see youth from Oregon, from all up and down the West Coast, really, and all over the country. As far as, you know, racial demographics, we see them across the board. I'd say that within the juvenile justice system, we do see a much higher percentage of African-American youth, but again, that really reflects who is typically on the street in prostitution that law enforcement is picking up on a nightly basis. So that doesn't necessarily tell us a lot about who makes up the entire population, but rather who is on the street, because we know that law enforcement has an easier time identifying youth who are on the street versus those who are being prostituted over the internet.
Okay. And what about in terms of recruiting? You've mentioned that several times. How are these girls getting recruited?
Well, they're being, you know, these traffickers are extremely savvy, so they know how to identify the youth who clearly doesn't have access to resources, the kid in the mall who doesn't have the latest sneakers, the latest clothes, and that's basically a tactic that they use to lure them in, you know, basically the sort of boyfriend scenario of approaching them, asking them out on a date, offering to buy them things that, you know, no one has ever really offered to buy them before, mm-hmm. or even just simply telling them, you know, complimenting them, telling them they're beautiful, luring them in emotionally so that they become attached in a way that it becomes very tricky when that same individual really turns on them and says, well, now in exchange for the gifts and the love that I've showed you, this is what I want you to do for me. And if that youth has no other support system in their life, then they're very likely to feel like this is something they need to do. And if they're disconnected from other resources, then it's very unlikely that they're going to ask for help or recognize that this is wrong. We also see youth who are, unfortunately, they're youth who are put out on the street by their own parents. If you have kids who are put out by a drug-addicted parent, they're neglected by a foster parent. And traffickers also know that plenty of the kids who are living in group homes are, you know, anxious to get out. And traffickers literally will sit outside and recruit kids outside of the group home, pick them up and take them, you know, to the track, which is where street prostitution occurs, or lure them in with a hotel room and some other false promises and basically put them on the internet. So wow. We see familiar networks through the family, and then we also see just, you know, the guys who might approach a youth just randomly on the street.
Well, let me bring in Charmaine Bach. You are Assistant District Attorney of Alameda County. Why is the Bay Area such a hot spot?
Well, you know, we're the home of the internet, Silicon Valley, and it's radically changed the face of what was once known as traditional pimping and pandering. In 2004, the U.S. Census Bureau reported that there are approximately 24.5 million children between the ages of 10 and 17 on the internet, and 1 in 7 is solicited online. And so in our schools, when you're teaching English and science and math, assuming you go to school, but you don't know what love looks like, you can get very easily and readily lured over the internet into trafficking. And so we've seen that really just rising more and more each year, especially when you see how profitable it is to sell a child. We're seeing a mass exodus of people who are in drugs, selling drugs, going into child sex trafficking, similarly with gangs. And you can only sell your dope once, but you can sell that one child over and over again. We have quite a problem with, as Molly identified, you know, runaway youth, foster care youth, system-involved youth is another way that it's described. But human trafficking is something that can happen to anybody's child. When you're on the internet and you don't really know who is on the other side luring you. And I've had cases where, in fact, we've had families that are socioeconomically advantaged who've done everything they possibly could, but their children have still been tricked. So it's something that can happen to anybody's child.
So you mentioned the internet as one of the reasons the Bay Area is a hot spot. So is mm-hmm. there's more people in the Bay Area that use the internet because it's just kind of part of the landscape, if you will?
Well, I mean, I think that, I mean, when you look at some of the sites are actually from here, mm-hmm. Where kids were sold.
Where? Which sites?
Well, I mean, Craigslist. You used to be able to buy kids on Craigslist, and now that's been shut down. There's Eros.
Out of Craigslist, what was the title?
In the adult services section, you could buy actually children, and that was shut down not too long ago. There's other sites that exist here, and I don't necessarily want to advertise them on your radio show, but where children are reviewed. And we have open-air markets. Oakland International Boulevard is an open-air market for children, despite very best efforts to stem it. And many streets have what Molly referred to as the track, which are where kids are actually sold. We have a track here in San Francisco on Polk Street. We have one in Oakland on International. We'll be hearing from other people on your show, no doubt, who can identify the tracks in their areas. But it's where children go. And Hollywood has, to some degree, and the entertainment industry glamorized it, you know, back from the Pretty Woman movie to, MTV videos. So they think it's a party, and it's actually one of the more horrific experiences they'll have.
Now, have you, you have been involved in this for how long? You mentioned 2004.
Well, I mean, I first started seeing it when I was doing child molest cases in the child sex unit in the Alameda DA's office. And actually, my first case involved two girls that were in custody in juvenile hall in San Francisco that had been sold. And it was, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was something that I had never seen before as a professional prosecutor. But, I often recall driving down the street and seeing young girls on the corners and thinking, why don't they just get a job at McDonald's? And really that was sort of testimony to my ignorance and my assumption, albeit incorrect, that kids are out there because they choose to be out there. And now that I've learned about it, I know that it's not that they're prostitutes, but they're prostituted. And that's why it's happening in our own backyard. And many people think that it's something that's just an international phenomenon, whereas it's in full force and effect here, and we see past these children because we make judgments about them. We make judgments that they're fast and loose, that it impairs their credibility, and we fail to recognize it as the least recognized form of child abuse in our country. Our most precious resource is our children, and the vast majority of America doesn't recognize that our children are being sold for sex. The Polaris Project estimated that one pimp with four girls in his stable stands to earn $632,000 a year tax-free. That's with a $500 a day quota, which is pretty much standard. So rain or shine, you got to go out there and make $500 before you get your McDonald's number four Happy Meal. And that is the reality of what's going on in our country. And our most educated citizens don't even realize it's happening here. So as a, you know, as a district attorney, who are you seeing in your courts? Are you seeing the pimps? Are you seeing the girls?
Well, we see both. So the HEAT unit was formed in the Alameda County DA's office, and it's a model unit that's now being replicated elsewhere. And since 2006, when our state's human trafficking law passed, through December 2011, we have charged 237 felony trafficking-related cases. We've convicted 160 of them of felony trafficking-related charges, and 34 are pending. We have more numbers in that area, but we've also created a program called Safety Net, which rescues the girls. We've seen, since Safety Net was instituted in at the beginning of 2011, we have seen 168 girls come through, system-involved youth coming through who are either at risk for or involved in commercial sexual exploitation. The identified youth that we've seen have been between the ages of 12 and 20, and they go through the program called Safety Net, which is really where you connect all the dots: probation, social services, the defense bar, education, health care, the DA, juvenile and adult. Many of these people work on this issue, but rarely do they all come together in one room to discuss the children that are in the system. And so what happens as a result is these children fall through the cracks, and literally the traffickers are bottom feeders waiting to snatch them up and make just a ton of money on them. And the girls just keep cycling through the system over and over again. And we see in Safety Net, obviously 70% of the children that we've seen are from Alameda County, but a full 30% are from other places such as San Francisco, San Mateo, Santa Cruz, Las Vegas, Los Angeles. The track is what we have in each city, but the circuit is what exists around the country.
Let me now talk to Lieutenant Jason Fox. So you are in charge of the Special Victims Unit. Can you tell me a little bit more what this does, what your role is, how it's different from other units?
Well, the Special Victims Unit was placed together by Chief Sir in October of this last year. And what it does is it takes all the different disciplines, sort of like Charmaine talked about, all the different players. This is all the different investigative roles. So it combines domestic violence, sex crimes, juvenile crimes, human trafficking, some elements of our vice unit, all under one roof, all geographically co-located. So the investigative expertise covers all of those different specific types of crimes. As well as what it does is it allows, within the human trafficking is what we're talking about now, is it allows that broad spectrum of human trafficking, both on the sex side as well as labor side, the domestic violence, the relationship these young girls are in, we're touching human trafficking underneath all those different disciplines. So the Special Victims Unit, by having a coordinated approach to these victims with a victim-based methodology in the investigations, the chief has set up a system in which we're more readily able to identify these victims and get them the assistance that they need, both through the criminal justice system as well as the support services like Molly offers through SAGE.
So, okay. So when we're talking about other kinds of breaking the law, you know, it seems like you have to look pretty far. But with these girls, they're all over the place. So why can't you just come and snatch them all up? And I mean, I know you need a reason, but like you kind of know. I mean, but in a way, it feels like different than a different kind of, it's a different kind of prostitution, because they're not there by choice most of the time, right? They're there because they've been put in this scenario.
Well, the track is the visual place that you see this activity being occurring, where you see these young ladies you see them, they're public, their activity is public, and the police does a very good job in all of the jurisdictions represented here in identifying those girls that are on the, quote, track.
Right.
However, these young women being marginalized in our society, being vulnerable to different type of manipulations, are also being identified now through other means. What may start as a domestic violence situation where we believe it's a boyfriend assaulting his girlfriend, we realize that there's a deeper relationship there in which he's also pimping her out. So it's that deeper, you know, it's peeling back the layers of an onion, to use an anecdote, to how we're approaching trying to identify these victims, so maybe we can get them before they're tracked out. Mm-hmm. The the pimping out, the commercial sex. This is a slow process that goes on where they develop trust. These pimps develop trust with these young women, and slowly and surely they manipulate these women into being on the track. But there are certain other crimes that may predicate that, such as some narcotics trafficking or other things, to try to build that bond. And we're trying to intercede when that relationship is still being formed. So that's why the different disciplines are so important in that early intervention.
Do the girls look out for each other, or do they kind of turn on each other?
You know, it goes both ways. I hate to paint anything with a broad brush. We have situations where a woman is only being commercially sexually exploited by one man, and there's no other women there. Those are some of the most difficult ones for us to, one, prosecute, and to convince this young lady who's been indoctrinated that she really is a victim and that this isn't a loving, good relationship. And there's also, you know, those cases like Charmaine had alluded to, where there may be more gang involvement, and that may have multiple young women being the victim of one pimp or the victim of one individual. Those cases, obviously, they give us many different tacks because we have many different victims and many different motivations. They're all difficult cases, and every one of them is complex.
Who are the Johns? Are these sex predators, or do they know that these girls are 12 to 14 years old?
They do know the age of their victims. And in some of the deviant sexual realms, the age of the victims is one of the things that makes them the commodity that allows them to be sold to create so much money. They know who these are. They're criminals. They're out to make money. And the tool that they're using to make money is like any other criminal activity. For some, it's narcotics. For some, it's stolen cars. For them, it is manipulation and selling these young women for sex to create a profit. And they're profit-driven.
And what about the men that are choosing to buy them?
They come from all walks of life.
Do they know it? They know the age of the girls?
Yes, in many cases that they do. In many cases, this is a segment of prostitution, a dark side to a very dark issue, a darker side to a dark issue, where you have some of these Johns, some of these customers know exactly how old these young women are, and they seek them out.
Interesting. I was asked to actually go to Hawaii to help with their human trafficking problem, and I thought that I would see in Hawaii girls from sort of the Pacific Rim, but there were actually young girls from the Bay Area being sold on Waikiki Beach there, right outside, you know, the Royal Hawaiian, that pink hotel on Oahu, and everyone from Japanese tourists to men in Brooks Brothers suits were out there with these young children.
Wow, that was Charmaine Bach, the assistant district attorney for Alameda County. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions, and tonight we're discussing sexual trafficking. My guests are Charmaine Bach, Assistant District Attorney for Alameda County, Jason Fox from the SFPD, Adrian Beckman, Deputy Probation Officer of San Mateo County, and Molly Ring, Chief of Programs for SAGE. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. Have you noticed girls on the streets and never thought they were just hanging out, or they should get a job at McDonald's? Do you know people who have suffered, adults or kids? We want to hear from you. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I'd like to bring in Adrian Beckman, Deputy Probation Officer in San Mateo. Now, you are kind of on the other side in that you're developing a protocol to help the girls. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So can you tell us a little bit about what this is?
So this has been a rather long journey that I've been working on this project with my partner, Kimberly Calderero, who's also a probation officer. And basically, we started a lot of research and a lot of networking back in May to really, you know, establish what's going on, what is the problem, identifying the problem, and trying to come up with solutions for supporting these young people that are being exploited and trafficked. So, you know, we went across counties, went to Alameda County, went to different community-based organizations, had a lot of conversations, went to a lot of meetings, and really tried to gather information and support services. So what we did is we kind of, you know, went through different ways to focus on working with these youth in the probation system specifically. Ms. Bach has brought up the system issue. So we also have the CPS, the Child Family Services system, and then there's also the probation system. Now, a lot of these young people fall into different categories and live and move between different counties. So the networking is really important. So what we basically did was we tried to focus on safety as the number one issue because, you know, as a high-risk victim, these young people are really at risk to be manipulated and abused and, you know, put back on the street and led to believe that this is something normal, that, you know, there's no way out. And so we really want to make safety a number one concern. And then, you know, we also want to support police officers, law enforcement, district attorneys in prosecuting the perpetrator and recognizing the Johns, which I'm glad you mentioned that because they keep this business going. And it's really unfortunate that men go and purchase children to have sex with them. So they keep the business going. The pimps put them out there. There's witnesses that watch this happening. That tends to be us. And now we're trying to step in. Everyone should step in and everyone can have a role. So basically you have the prosecution element and also connecting them to services. So making sure that your local rape crisis centers are on notice, making sure that, you know, these children are being followed, whether or not they have a probation case or if they just have a 300 case, which means they're in the CPS system, whether or not they have a new charge. Somebody needs to follow this young person and make sure that they're safe first and foremost. So basically, that's what we're developing is kind of like, you know, Ms. Bach referred to as the safety net. We're developing the multidisciplinary team, which already has been in practice in San Mateo County for other areas. So we're applying this to working with these young people and basically, hey, everybody come together, give your input. How can we all support each other in making sure this person isn't, you know, worst case scenario killed and best case scenario that they get out of the life and they get support and move on, you know, as a productive and successful individual in society. So essentially we want to train the probation department staff. This is our goal, that we all are aware of this issue and that these children don't fall through the cracks any longer, that we support them. And if they do exist in the probation system as a victim slash offender, because these are young people that also have crimes that, you know, are following them. So once they're in our system, we want to make sure they have the proper support and the right connections with organizations like SAGE and Missy out of Oakland and Freedom House in San Mateo County, which actually serves adults. But basically, they need to be connected into services, someone that's going to care and take the time to listen and really make sure that, are you safe? Can you get away? And to work with the Stockholm syndrome that these young people find themselves in, where they find it very hard to leave the abuser because that's the person that loves them, you know, and that's the person that supports them. So it's very hard to convince a young person that, hey, you know, this is, you're a victim. Who wants to be a victim?
Well, let me go back to, that's very interesting. Let me go back to Molly with kind of jumping off from this, where, you know, these kids come from, they're kids, and they come, you said 90% come from really foster homes, like no one who does love them. So why would they want to leave and, if you will, kind of grow up and get help?
Well, I mean, I think that part of the greatest challenge for us is, you know, the way we think of it, when a youth comes into our program, that the pimp controls 90% of her mind, you know, and we maybe can tap into 10%. And the goal is really to flip that, you know, is so that we can, through really education, through building peer support, through meeting their needs in ways other than the ways that they've been surviving through prostitution, they will actually come to see that there are other opportunities for them, that they can be loved, that they can be children again. You know, many of these youth just lost their childhoods completely, either because this started when they were very young children, and they were, you know, they're so traumatized that they've just lost connection to that. Or just because over time, you know, developmentally, they never, they just never really developed into having sort of the proper teenage experiences. Those were stolen from them. Mm-hmm. So one strategy that we use are peer counselors. So SAGE was actually started by a survivor of child sexual exploitation, Ms. Norma Hotelling. And, the, you know, one of her goals in starting this organization was to provide survivor-centered services. So that's the idea that survivors are uniquely qualified to serve other survivors and to help them. And so many of our peer counselors are able to build rapport very quickly with these youth because they can say to them, you know, you can't tell me that I don't understand what you're talking about. You can't say, you know, you've never been there, you've never done that, because I have. And so that sort of gets us in the door and allows us to start to chip away at that, you know, 90-10% ratio. And then we, from there, we really launch into, okay, let's break down what is a healthy relationship. This is through our life skills program. So in addition to counseling, mental health counseling, case management, advocacy in the court system, we're working with them on these topics of what do healthy relationship looks like? What does a pimp look like? You know, what is sexual exploitation? What does it mean? What does the media tell you about prostitution? And what are the realities of prostitution? Mm-hmm. So we're really kind of attacking it from all these other, you know, all these different directions. And fundamentally,
Molly, I'm going to actually
ways of meeting their needs. You know, they need a job. They need something that's going to allow them to buy the resources that they that put them out there in the first place, that made them vulnerable in the first place.
Okay, that was Molly from SAGE. Let me just say, if you're just tuning in to City Visions, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing sexual trafficking. My guests are Charmaine Bach, Assistant District Attorney for Alameda County, Lieutenant Jason Fox from the SFPD, Adrian Beckman, Deputy Probation Officer for San Mateo County, and Molly Ring, Chief of Programs from SAGE, Standing Against Global Exploitation Project. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. We would like to hear from you. Again, if you have seen people on the streets, have you? Has it ever occurred to you that these girls, I should say girls, might have been sold into prostitution, and how do you feel about that? And how do you think that they should be brought in and arrested, or do you think that people should be going after the pimps? We'll be exploring that a little bit more in a second. The number to call if you want to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let me go right now to Bob from Palo Alto. He's the first call of the evening. Hello, Bob.
Hi, how are you? First, I'd like to say what an excellent program this is. Opening up an area which a lot of people don't realize exists.
Bob, were you aware of this, just out of curiosity?
Before? No, I was not. I was not. This program is a real eye-opener and a sad one. I'd like to ask the officer a question. Lauren started to ask you about why isn't it easy to identify these girls and bring them in, so as to speak, so perhaps to get them some help. Or maybe arrest them and also lead to the pimps. Why, since there are these tracks apparently where these girls congregate, why isn't it fairly easy to just identify them and then pick them up? And the second question, I'm not sure it's for you, but do these girls that are brought in, do they manifest sexually transmitted disease like AIDS? Is that a problem? And in a sense, can't that be used to discourage the Johns from using them?
Good questions. So
there's a lot of questions.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for calling in, Bob.
Right.
On the enforcement aspect of identifying and targeting these young women for some type of intervention while they're on the track, that's just the tip of the iceberg, Bob. Right there, any given day. As Charmaine mentioned, a lot of these young women are being trafficked on the internet, which limits their exposure to traditional law enforcement methods. We do monitor the internet. We do respond to tips. We always accept tips, especially if anybody believes that a young woman is being placed into this position. But that track and that typical enforcement is very difficult. The chief is committed, however, to looking at that, identifying the issues of the track. We do reverse operations constantly in places of prostitution in San Francisco, where women are placed as decoys, looking to get rid of the consumer side, which is to try to get the offender John. Upon getting the offender John, we hope to take the business side out of it, make it too risky for John to come into San Francisco, come into our jurisdiction, and traumatize or place these women in a position where they can be prostituted for profit. We do that, and on that note, when we do identify those Johns and arrest them, we'd come with a multidisciplinary approach into dealing with that type of law enforcement violation, including John School, which is a thing that Molly can talk about. Sage is very involved in that, where it's an education tool into men who engage in sexual trafficking, a prostitution, where they learn all the different things and how prostitution works, the pimp, female relationship, et cetera. But the law enforcement, traditional law enforcement sweep of prostitution is just the tip of the iceberg in identifying and trying to address this problem.
So do you go about it the way you would in narcotics? I think Charmaine mentioned that it was, a lot of these people are switching. So they were narcotics and now they're girls. So do you approach the law enforcement similarly?
Well, the enforcement side, identifying... Well, we look at the offending behavior as prostitution, but the truth is these young women are being prostituted. So they are victims that are engaged in criminal activity. And I think that's a very important distinction to make, that these investigations, these human trafficking investigations that we do with children in San Francisco are victim-based. When we find a young woman engaged in commercial sex and she is underage and she is being pimped out, she's not a prostitute in our eyes. She's a victim of human trafficking. So we're identifying her by what would be viewed as criminal activity, but at that point, the investigation shifts. We attempt to rescue her from the situation, find the offending pimp or the offending individual that's forcing her or coercing her into the activity.
Okay. Adrienne Beckman, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, the caller brings up a really interesting point, and that is how come you can't just go out and swoop up all these young people and rescue them? Well, it becomes a little bit tricky because, this manipulation that the pimps do is built around relationship. And, these young people are convinced that they're in love with their abuser, essentially. So if you think of domestic violence type situations where everyone gets so frustrated, why does that woman keep going back to this man that's beating her up? Well, there's certain syndromes that get, psychologically in place whereby it's very hard for that victim, quote unquote, to leave the relationship. Even if they're asked by their partner, hey, we need money for the rent. Can you go out and, flip this trick and come back with $100? Or, we need to pay rent. Can you go make us some money just this one time? So they're what would be called a non-compliant victim. And in the probation system, they run away a lot. So, they're young people that are very hard to work with. They run away repeatedly. They don't want to talk. They've been groomed in being silent and not opening up to law enforcement and not, giving up their pimp, the person that's exploiting them, or their trafficker. There's plenty of books and movies that people can watch on Netflix and get online to, really watch why it is so scary for some of these people to leave their abuser. Like domestic violence or in trafficking situations, if you're constantly being told, hey, I'm going to kill your family if you don't do this, or hey, I'm going to go tell everyone what a slut you are or what a hoe you are, you're less likely to leave that relationship, or if you're convinced that person really loves you and you're doing this for love.
So if someone was kidnapped, there might be ransom, or you would have these... what is the line? You get these alerts, the Amber Alert, but that doesn't happen here, does it?
No.
Charmaine?
It does. There's two kinds of pimps, right? There's the Romeo pimp, the hey baby, I love you, and I just can't, I want to marry you and have children with you, but I can't make my rent, so could you go have sex with these 15 guys today and we'll be good. And then there's the gorilla pimp who literally grabs you off the street. And with both of those pimps, there's the Stockholm syndrome in full force and effect. So think about like a religious cult where you think that the leader is all powerful and you've actually been brainwashed and you're under their influence. So think about outside of this context. It might be easier when you take sex out of it. Like think of Patty Hearst. Think of Elizabeth Smart. You know, the girl who was like two blocks away from her mansion and stayed with the guy with the beard down to his knees and didn't go home. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Patty Hearst who, you know, by all accounts, who'd want to leave the Hearst Castle. Have you seen that swimming pool? And yet she didn't go back because she's under the influence of her captor, which is why we need to recognize, as my boss Nancy O'Malley has, by creating this program called Heat Watch, which is modeled after Neighborhood Watch. The community members are essential partners in our effort to combat child sex trafficking in the United States.
Okay, well, we're going to have to get back to that. Again, if you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco. Tonight, we're discussing sexual trafficking. My guests are Charmaine Bach, Assistant District Attorney for Alameda County, Lieutenant Jason Fox from the SFPD, Adrian Beckman, Deputy Probation Officer in the San Mateo County, and Molly Ring, Chief of Programs at SAGE. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. The number to call and join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let me go to my next caller. I have Brian from San Francisco. Good evening, Brian.
Hey. I was just looking at channels and, like, I was listening in, and I thought that you guys were missing, like, one part of the equation.
Okay.
So, like, the reason why there even would be sex trafficking is because there's such a big demand for it, right?
Yep. Good point.
So, yeah, one of the reasons would be it's kind of ingrained into males' brains that, I mean, to pretty much go out and get girls, like, there's going to be no way around it. It's hardwired into every guy's brain. So...
So Brian, oh yeah, Brian, are you, how old are you?
I'm 22.
Okay, and would you ever consider doing something like this?
I mean, no, because I'm a little more educated, but I'm sure there's thousands of guys out there that would.
Okay. Let me throw this to, Adrian.
Sure. I mean, the caller has a good point. You know,
Thank you, Brian.
Part of our culture that, you know, pimps are glamorized and women are, you know, put out there as objects to be had. And, you know, I think it's Women's History Month. So actually, it's important that we take a look at this and ask ourselves, why are predominantly young girls being sexually exploited? What are we teaching our young men? What are we teaching men in general to go out and buy this product, which is a human and in a lot of cases a child? So we do need to ask ourselves that. There is a strong, you know, you watch music videos or you look online, you see, you know, someone with four girls on their arms, right? And then you see these nice booty shorts and nice, you know, bootylicious outfit. And of course, you know, men are raised this way. He has a good point. And it's unfortunate. And men, you know, and people that are purchasing, people need to take a look at what part of the culture is influencing them to degrade women and to treat people as commodities.
Are teachers in schools, especially in high-risk areas, are they doing anything to counter what's happening with the media?
I mean, I think the Department of Education has... they issued a memorandum a few years back highlighting this issue to teachers because kids are actually recruited even in schools. And it's not just a guy that looks like a pimp that comes up and says, hey, baby, you know, on recess, right? Girls go into schools and they're called bottom girls and they work for the pimp. So there's an entire structure, a hierarchy. You've got the pimp, you've got the enforcer who's like the guy with a gun who's there to provide the security. You've got the bottom girls that train the girls and keep the girls, you know, supplied with condoms, dressed appropriately for the trade, all of that, you know, keeping a close tab. The bottom girl often was sort of his first girl ever that's truly and deeply in love with him. And they're, you know, perpetuating the exploitation that they themselves at some point experienced.
What a system.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we need to recognize fully that as long as we keep calling it prostitution and these children are under the age of 18, we perpetuate that system. We perpetuate that system as long as we drive by them on the streets and think that they're prostitutes, as long as we think that they're there because they choose to be there. We need to see it once and for all as child abuse. These are children, and every child at some point takes their brain out of their head and puts it on a shelf. Right. And so as adults, as parents, as citizens, as community members, we need to recognize that they are victims of child abuse and engage the community like through shows like yours, where we, you know, got like Bob, who had never heard about this before, calling in and saying, wow, this is happening, and saying, you know what, Bob, you are the eyes and ears for law enforcement, for the providers. Without you out there watching and calling into the tip lines or the national hotline, to identify, let's say, the license plate number. The police can't be everywhere at the same time. Everyone is underfunded and short-staffed, and so we really do need a partnership with community to help us eradicate a universal crisis that's occurring in our own backyard.
So is it really, with the pimps, and I guess this is for the lieutenant, is it really an issue of, being identified, you know, who these people are and the license plate number, or is it something much more complicated in terms of the law enforcement when it comes to the pimp side of things?
Well, the elements of the crime of pimping and pandering is enticing somebody to become a prostitute. Those are very difficult things, elements to prove, because you're going to need the testimony, you're going to need the story of the woman being victimized against her pimp. And we need to turn the table, and they have to be on the state side in bringing that case forward. Sometimes there's circumstantial things that we can bring forward to bring a case forward, but they're very difficult prosecutions without having the victim on board and getting to that victim and letting them know, you know, exactly where they stand and what their rights are and who they are as a person is one of the reasons we rely so much on, you know, our community. Community-based activism such as SAGE to help get us there, to help give the law enforcement some credibility that we do look at them as victims and not as prostitutes.
I mean, how long does a case take? Like, how often do you actually bust a pimp?
Quite often, too often, because that means that this is an ongoing problem. We actively investigate all tips and all cases if possible, pimping and pandering. These cases are brought forward. They are brought to trial. They're brought to preliminary hearing. A lot of times the victim becomes unavailable or recants, and it becomes very difficult without the accuser taking the stand for these cases to go forward. Regardless of the complexity of these cases, we do actively pursue them on a weekly, daily basis.
Let me. We have a couple of people that have called in with comments an email from Anne. She says, "Great show! Wow, why do we need girls to testify in order to prosecute the pimps when we can prosecute San Francisco sheriff? Though his wife denies any abuse and refuses to testify. So why is that? What's the difference?"
I'm not going to speak in a comparison between those two things that she brought
Fair
up.
Enough.
But one of the things that's very important that is in a successful prosecution is the individual being charged with a crime has the right to face their accuser. In a case such as pimping and pandering that has very specific elements to make that case, that testimony of the accuser, of the victim, is extremely important. Cases can be made on purely circumstantial evidence, but they're very difficult to make if it's a specific intent crime as opposed to a general intent crime.
Yeah, shimmering.
And let me just say, so pimping and pandering is one way you can proceed, right? And the maximum you get for pimping and pandering is 8 years. And it's a really old and arcane law. Every other word in that law is prostitute, prostitution. And it doesn't really capture the essence of what's going on, which is slavery. So human trafficking is another statute that's available. But our human trafficking law is not in very good shape. Our federal law is better than our state law, which is why the CASE Act, which is an initiative right now that is gathering signatures and will be on the ballot, coming up on the ballot, is so critical because it will send a very clear and strong message. And I say this as a citizen, not even as a prosecutor, just a strong message to pimps out there that this is the very last state in the country where you want to be buying and or selling children, because the penalties will be so high, the law will be so clear, and it will bring relief for so many of the children that we have in California that are being bought and sold.
Well, so I have another person who's, this person actually called in, but had to get off the phone, but they want to raise the issue of sexual addiction, and he thinks that it's the big part of the problem. So it seems like, you know, there's the business side of things, and then there's the buyer, and then there's the seller. Do you think that this is a seller's market or a buyer's market?
When you're making $632,000 a year, I mean, there's really no better bang for your buck, sadly, than selling a child for sex. I mean, where can you make that kind of a return? I mean, look at dope. You have to buy the dope with the overhead. You got to cut it up into little pieces. You got to package it. You have to stand on a street corner and risk drive-by shootings and so forth. Whereas with child sex trafficking, most of America doesn't even know what's going on. These girls are under the influence of the traffickers. It's hidden because of the internet from public view. People that even drive by make judgments and keep driving. So it's the perfect crime.
What is the role of the FBI in prosecuting these CSEC crimes that run across the state lines? Lieutenant?
The FBI and our other federal partners, U.S. Marshal Service, Customs, sometimes other ones that come into play, immigration as well. They are very involved in our investigations, especially those that do cross state lines. Charmaine alluded to earlier, the track is the local name, but the circuit is the overall larger thing. These girls who might be victimized in San Francisco may then become victims in Oakland, become victims in Las Vegas, become victims, like she said, in Hawaii. These pimps are trying to stay one step ahead of the law. They're moving their girls around. When we do identify a clear nexus to any type of interstate criminal activity, the FBI is very, very quickly brought in, and they're a wonderful partner, wonderful law enforcement partner.
You can't put a kilo of cocaine on the internet and say, hey, I've got a kilo of cocaine, and somebody from Connecticut calls up and wants to buy it. But you can put children on the internet, and there's various sites where that goes on still. And so that's why you read about in the news, for example, kids ending up at the Super Bowl in Florida or, you know, in Atlanta for conventions. They get sent to where the demand is all over the country. And we're so busy in our airports checking for liquids that nobody ever stops to ask about the relationship between the adult and the child going through that metal detector.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, as a community, what we can do to battle this, to combat the CSEC crime. So what should people be looking for as far as signs that a girl or a boy, for that matter, is being sexually exploited? I don't know, Adrian?
Right. So, and I just want to comment that it does sound like a really good job opportunity, you know, kind of how it's worded, that it's such a money-making industry. But what we can do, you know, and I mean that in kind of a, you know, sarcastic way, but what we can do as community members is make sure that we're taking the time to have important conversations with young people, really listening to them, meeting young people where they're at, and, you know, being a role model adult, not participating in these cycles of violence.
Well, let me just interrupt you. There's another question that just came in, and they want to know what percentage of children had parents who were prostitute or pimps, and therefore grew up in this business. Do you know that?
Maybe Molly might know that.
Molly?
Intergenerational prostitution. So we have cases where the grandmother was in prostitution, the mother was in prostitution, and the child. And that's because they actually were so ingrained in the industry that they then prostituted out their own child.
Wow. What percentage of children are in this?
I couldn't give you an actual percentage of the intergenerational, but I can tell you that it's not, it's definitely not unheard of. And they're also highly influenced, you know, by their peers or anyone that they're exposed to who might be recruiting them. So if it's not a direct parent, it may be an older sibling, a close friend. So we shouldn't overlook sort of the, you know, how often it is a familial network.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have Daphne online. Daphne is on the phone. Hello, Daphne.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to, that's one of the things that communities can do across California is to get involved with the CASE Act, which is what Charmaine mentioned, and they can go to our website to sign the petition for the initiative to get it on the ballot in November. It's the website is CASEACT.org, and it's not too late. They could sign it tonight, and they can still mail it in tomorrow. We can still use the signatures.
How far are you from getting the number of signatures you need?
Well, as of this week, we should have about 750,000 signatures. So we're like about 50,000 signatures away from our goal.
Oh, great.
We're really close.
So if you're out there listening and you feel strongly about this issue, please go to the CASE website.
All right. Thank you.
So how can parents and caregivers, I bet there's a lot of parents out there that are thinking to themselves, I have a daughter, what am I going to do to help protect them? I mean, if it's that easy, Charmaine, do you have any ideas for parents out there?
So there is a coalition in the Bay Area, and it encompasses all nine Bay Area counties. It's called the Bay Area HEAT Coalition. HEAT stands for Human Exploitation and Trafficking. It's called BAC. And we have many parents that are in BAC from as far away as Santa Cruz. And so come to BAC. Call 510-272-6222 and sign up and come to the next BAC meeting. And then you'll learn what to look for. There are flyers. There's a bunch of material that we can give parents, from how to talk to your kids about online safety to how to get involved and engage the different partners in your own hometown. There's also ways to raise awareness and involve your children in this. There's a run that's happening here in San Francisco on May 6th. Chief Sir is a sponsor. Congresswoman Jackie Spear is a sponsor. It's called girlsontrack.org. And it's the first ever of its kind in the country, run by children for children, to show solidarity with the children that are out there being sold. And all contributions are tax deductible and will benefit really the gold standard, which is New Day for Children. It's a boarding school for children from all over California where they can go and heal and stay until they're 18 years of age. So please sign up for girlsontrack.org, and there's registration going on right now online.
Okay, well, we're getting to the top of the hour, but I thought maybe we could end this on a more positive note. Maybe, Molly, if you could maybe just tell just briefly an anecdote of a girl that, you know, came in when you saw her, beginning to maybe a positive where she is now. Do you have anything you could share with us?
Sure, we have so many cases like that, and I would really want to tell the story of, you know, so many of our staff. So
maybe you could just tell one, because we're running out of time. So
well, no, I'm not going to tell you all the stories. Yeah. I just mean that I think our staff are an incredible reflection of the resiliency and the success that really is possible, because many the staff who do identify as survivors, you know, they do fit the description, the profile that we've talked about today. They may have suffered from childhood sexual abuse. They went through long histories of trauma and were out on the track in prostitution at a very young age. And because of a successful intervention, either by the SAGE Project or, if it predated us, you know, by another organization, but many of them were clients at SAGE, they not only, you know, were able to deal with their trauma, but they dealt with substance use issues. They got re-engaged with education, and they're now providing services to other victims of exploitation. And not only that, but they're going a step further. So they're pursuing, I mean, our director of programs is pursuing her PhD. I mean, we many incredible examples of people who have just not only changed their own lives around, but are really giving back to so many other girls and youth, adults, you know, across the board who have had similar experiences.
Wonderful. Well, that's it for City Visions for this evening. Our guests again tonight were Charmaine Bach, Assistant District Attorney for Alameda County, Lieutenant Jason Fox from the SFPD, Adrian Beckman, Deputy Probation Officer from San Mateo County, and Molly Ring, Chief of Programs for SAGE, which is Standing Against Global Exploitation Project. Thank you to all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen. Thank you so much, Eric. Tonight's show was produced by Victoria Thorpe. Fantastic, Victoria. And City Vision senior producers Judith Sanson and Neil Fries manages our website. Join my co-host Joseph Pache next week when we'll discuss California's domestic workers' rights bill. This is Lauren Meltzer. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.
You've been listening to City Visions on KALW San Francisco 91.7 FM. City Visions comes to you every Monday evening at 7 o'clock. KALW has a free email newsletter. Join more than 7,000 of your fellow listeners who get an email every week or two to keep them aware of the diverse programming on local public radio, as well as opportunities to participate in station events. Just click the email newsletter.